We stand on the edge of a shifting blue world. Our history is written in the sand, but the tide is coming in faster than we can rewrite the script. The Caribbean is more than a postcard. It is a fragile network of life, a series of mountain peaks rising from a deep basin, now facing a biological and atmospheric audit we did not ask for. We have survived conquest, slavery, and the heavy hand of empires, but the enemy now is not a man or a flag. It is the temperature of the water. It is the silence in the forest. It is the very chemistry of the air that feeds our lungs. We are the most climate-vulnerable region on this planet. Our survival is not a theory. It is a daily negotiation with a changing sun and a rising sea. As the heat climbs, the question is no longer when the change will come. The question is if there will be anything left to save once the dust settles. The water was never supposed to be this quiet. In the Mesoamerican Reef, the largest barrier system in our hemisphere, the vibrant oranges and deep purples of the coral are turning to a ghostly skeletal white. This is coral bleaching. It is the physical manifestation of a fever. When the sea surface temperature rises, even by 1 or 2 degrees for a sustained period, the tiny algae living inside the coral tissues are expelled. These algae provide the food and the color. Without them, the coral starves. We are watching the foundation of our islands crumble in real time. It is a slow-motion collapse that threatens every fish, every shoreline, and every person who relies on the sea for a plate of food. This is not just about the loss of beauty. Our history is tied to the reef, because the reef is our first line of defense. It breaks the power of the Atlantic swells before they reach our homes. Without the reef, the sea has an open road to our front doors. Every storm becomes a potential eraser of history. The heat does not just stay in the water, it fuels the sargassum invasion, a brown, rotting tide of seaweed that chokes our bays and kills our mangroves. This seaweed is a biological footprint of global runoff and rising temperatures. It robs the water of oxygen. It turns turquoise bays into stinking sulfuric graveyards. We are seeing the very nature of our coastline change from a place of life to a zone of decay. The scale of the warming is difficult to grasp until you see the charts. The Caribbean Sea is a heat sink. It traps the energy of a warming world and holds it close. This energy does not just sit there. It transforms into the kinetic power of hurricanes that move slower and carry more water than our ancestors ever recorded. We are living in a basin that is being pressurized. The balance that allowed our civilizations to flourish for centuries is tilting. We see it in the dying sea grapes and the crumbling limestone cliffs. The sea is no longer a provider, it is becoming an intruder. If the reefs die, the sand dies with them. Our beaches are the pulverized remains of coral and shells, processed over millennia by the life of the sea. When the biological engine stops, the replacement of the land stops too. We are looking at a future where the physical footprint of our islands begins to shrink. This is the first gate of the crisis. It is the realization that the geography we took for granted is a living thing, and right now, that living thing is struggling to breathe. We have built our cities and our lives on the assumption that the sea would stay in its place. That assumption is gone. The water is rising, and the ground beneath us is losing the strength to hold it back. The forests of the Caribbean are losing their voices. In the high ridges of the Greater Antilles, from the Blue Mountains of Jamaica to the peaks of Hispaniola, a quiet catastrophe is unfolding. We call it the extinction debt. It is the gap between the moment a habitat is destroyed and the moment the species within it finally vanish. We are currently living in that gap. Our islands are home to thousands of species that exist nowhere else on the earth. These are endemics. They are the unique biological signatures of our home. But as we clear the land for industrial tourism and expanding cities, we are fragmenting the wild. We are creating small isolated islands of green within our islands of rock. When a forest is fragmented, it begins to lose its function. We see the emergence of the empty forest syndrome. The trees are still standing, but the birds that spread the seeds and the insects that pollinate the flowers are gone. Without the animals, the forest is a living museum that has stopped reproducing. It is waiting to die. In Puerto Rico and Cuba, rare parrots and unique reptiles are being pushed into smaller and smaller corners. They are trapped by a geography of our own making. We have traded the long-term stability of our ecosystems for the short-term gains of the concrete poor. The cost of this erasure is not just biological, it is cultural. Our folklore, our medicine, and our identity are rooted in the plants and animals of our islands. When the bird that our grandfathers sang about no longer flies, a piece of our history is deleted. We are seeing a massive shift in the land use patterns across the region. The drive for economic growth often treats the environment as a backdrop rather than a foundation. We build massive resorts on the edges of wetlands, destroying the nurseries of the sea to provide a view of the water. We are cutting the very hands that feed us. In the interior of our islands, the soil is also under threat. Deforestation leads to erosion, and erosion leads to the death of the valleys. When the rains come, the mountains slide. We have seen this in Haiti, where the lack of tree cover has turned regular storms into national tragedies. The loss of the forest is the loss of the sponge. Without the roots to hold the water, the rain becomes a weapon. It washes the topsoil into the sea, where it smothers the remaining coral. It is a cycle of destruction that links the highest peak to the deepest trench. We are witnessing the unraveling of a web that took millions of years to weave. The pressure is mounting from every direction. As the habitat disappears, the animals have nowhere to go. They cannot migrate across the ocean to find a new home. For an island species, extinction is often a local event that becomes a global permanent loss. We are the guardians of these unique lives, but our grip is slipping. The expansion of our footprint has left no room for the wild. We are moving toward a future where our children may only know the richness of our biodiversity through books and recordings. The stakes are no longer about preservation. They are about preventing a total biological bankruptcy that will leave our islands silent and barren. The map of the Caribbean is being redrawn by hand, and the hand is the rising tide. We are approaching a moment of managed retreat. This is the hardest truth our history has ever had to face. In low-lying states like the Bahamas and the Grenadines, the salt water is already entering the groundwater. It is bubbling up through the soil, killing crops and making the land unlivable, long before the waves actually cover the roofs. This is climate migration in our own backyard. People are moving from the coasts to the hills, and from the small islands to the larger ones. We are becoming refugees within our own borders. The international community speaks of green funds and climate justice, but the money rarely reaches the ground where the salt is stinging the eyes. We have been told to wait for global solutions while our peers are being washed away. The bureaucracy of international aid is not designed for the speed of a rising ocean. We are finding that the systems meant to protect the world are often blind to the specific agony of the archipelago. We are being asked to solve a problem we did not create, using tools we do not own. The uncertainty of the future is now the only constant in our lives. But in the face of this silence from the global powers, there is a quiet resurgence of our own knowledge. We are looking back to the traditional ecological knowledge of our ancestors. We are learning how to plant according to the old cycles, how to build with materials that breathe, and how to manage the land without the heavy hand of industrial chemicals. This is not a return to the past. It is a survival strategy for the future. We are finding that the most resilient systems are the ones we once discarded in the name of progress. Our history has always been one of adaptation. We are the descendants of those who survived the Middle Passage and the plantation. Survival is in our DNA. The question remains, will it be enough? The scale of the change is so vast that local efforts can feel like throwing stones at a fortress. We are watching the failure of international treaties to lower the carbon that heats our water. We are witnessing the continued extraction of the Earth's resources by the same powers that now lecture us on sustainability. The irony is bitter. Our islands are the canary in the coal mine, but the miners are still digging. The weight of the world's choices is falling directly on our shoulders. We are the generation that will decide what remains. We are the ones who must choose between a future of managed decline or a radical reimagining of how we live on these rocks. The uncertainty is heavy, but it is also a space for action. We have to become the architects of our own resilience, because no one else is coming to save us. The map is changing, the forest is thinning, and the sea is warming. Every decision we make today determines if our grandchildren will have a home to call their own. Our history is at a crossroads. We can either be the witnesses to our own erasure, or the pioneers of a new way to survive on a changing planet. The water is at the door.